welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome, everyone, to the Political Festival Radio Program. It is Saturday night, December 27th, 2008. We're 2 days beyond Christmas, and how are you feeling tonight? I'm feeling pretty good about things. I hope you are, too. We're going to do our damnedest to give you a good show tonight and try to talk about all the things you want to hear. Welcome to the show again, and I'm James Edwards. How about Christmas? Pretty big day, I would say. But can you believe this? Christmas has left my illustrious staff exhausted. Here I am flying solo tonight. Bill Rowland has overdosed on eggnog. Winston Smith was over in China. He just got back last week. He's still claiming to have jet lag. And poor Eddie the Bombardier Miller, you know, Eddie works the night shift at his job. He had just switched around his days to where he would have Sunday off. Because the political cesspool used to broadcast on Sunday before we were picked up by RBN. Now that we're on Saturday night, he can't get the night off because he switched it to have Sundays off so he could be on the show. Anyway, long story short, I'm flying solo tonight. The guys have wimped out on me. And if it sounds like I've got a sinus cold tonight, it's because I have a sinus cold tonight. And I was thinking about calling in myself, but then I thought about, you know, Nathan Bedford Forrest at Fallen Timbers, and I think my sacrifice tonight is just as big as his, just as big as those from the men who stormed the beaches at Normandy. James Edwards calling in tonight, 2 days after Christmas, with a sinus cold to host the show. This is going to be a show to be remembered. You know, and I didn't want to break my streak either because we haven't played a tape show all year. All year. I want to have a clean year where I don't miss a show, or at least the show does air live, even if someone else is hosting it for me. We're going to get it done, and we do have a big show tonight. Coming up this evening, actually in a couple of moments, Dr. Yuri Maltsev and Dr. F. Roger Devlin will be on. We're going to have a scholarly discussion, as you've come accustomed to on this program. We're going to be talking about the man, Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. Do you know who he was? Do you know what his politics were all about? Well, we're going to find out during the first hour as we talk with two very esteemed PhDs, both of whom have made appearances on this program before, Dr. Maltsev and Dr. Devlin, respectively. That'll be the first hour. Coming up later, though, much, much more in store tonight, to be sure. We're going to be talking about the Rick Warren controversy. Have you heard about that? He's going to be giving the prayer at the Obama inauguration. And was Barack Obama serious about appointing an outspoken homosexual as Secretary of the Navy? Talk about that, your calls, and more. And coming up in the third hour tonight, we're going to be recounting the top 10 highlights of 2008 here in the Political Cesspool, a Political Cesspool year-in-review show, as it were. And, again, your calls, and even some more tidbits, more than you can handle, I promise you. So sit down, buckle up, hold on tight. We're here live 2 days after Christmas, December 27th, and we are going to give it to you as hard as we can for the next 3 hours, and we hope you enjoy it. The Political Cesspool will be back in just a moment here on RBN, broadcasting live from our flagship station right here in Memphis, Tennessee, AM 1380 WLRM Radio. It's going to be a bumpy ride, folks. Sit down. James Edwards will be back with you right after this.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Sunset Strip.
If you can handle the truth, pick up a copy of Plain Truth by John Tee, a concise critique of contemporary American government for its refusal to acknowledge our true origins as a Western Christian nation. Plain Truth will inform and inspire readers who are eager to partake in the long and difficult process necessary to restore the American Republic. As citizens of this great republic, we can perform no more important task than realizing our duty to preserve our unique culture, heritage, and people despite a formidable foe within our own nation. Read Plain Truth and you'll discover the importance of identifying the cause, exploring the consequences, and discovering solutions to our unfortunate situation. The debate must shift toward a focus upon culture, history, and nationalism. Plain Truth by John Tee proves that racial diversity and Republican government are incompatible with one another. Plain Truth by John Tee is available through Amazon, Target, Borders, and Barnes & Noble bookstores.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Personal information should stay personal, but the growth of contactless ID cards, passports, and credit cards, and the proliferation of RFID has caused an increased threat to sensitive personal information, with the risk potential for RFID-enabled contactless cards to be read without your permission. Introducing Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder products from Identity Stronghold. If you have a credit, debit, or transit card with a contactless smart card system, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have an employee ID, proximity card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have a government employee PIV, CAC, or TWIT card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you received your passport within the last 2 years, you need Identity Stronghold. Identity Stronghold Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder create a barrier to RF signals necessary to power and communicate with RFID-enabled smart cards and passports. Protect your personal information. Visit IDStronghold.com today or phone 800-610-2770 because personal information should stay personal.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. To get on the show, call toll-free at 1-800-313-9443. And now here's your host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
And we are going to be opening up those phone lines during the second and third hours, respectively, of tonight's live broadcast. Welcome back to the show. James Edwards here. 1-800-313-9443. That is the number. And we encourage you to call in. Beginning at the top of the second hour, we're going to be talking about, Rick Warren, Barack Obama, the year in review, top 10 highlights from the political cesspool, the year that was 2008, all that and more coming up a little bit later on in tonight's program. But first, a couple of very good guests, men, both of whom have made appearances on this program before. Dr. F. Roger Devlin holds a Ph.D. in philosophy. He has published articles in the Occidental Quarterly and the American Renaissance Magazine, two illustrious journals, to be sure. He has also been a columnist at The Last Ditch. Appearing simultaneously this evening with Dr. Devlin is Dr. Yuri Maltsev. He received his Ph.D. in economics at the Institute for Labor Research in Moscow. He has an impressive publishing record, which consists of 5 monographs, contributions to 16 books, 73 articles, including co-authored materials, in American, Russian, Turkish, Japanese, and Taiwanese journals, magazines, and newspapers. He is currently a professor at the Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Let's get down to business. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us here during this special period between Christmas and New Year's. I know a lot of people are very busy. I want to thank you in advance for taking time out of your busy schedules to join us tonight on the air. How are you guys doing?
Hello, Jim.
Yes, Roger, it's good to talk to you again. And Dr. Devlin, are you hanging in there?
Yes, I am here.
All right, everybody's here. Let's get down to business. Guys, as you know, what we're here to talk about tonight is a subject, or should I say a man, that perhaps some of our listening audience isn't all that familiar with, that being Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Why is it, guys, and I'll start with you, Dr. Maltsev, why is it important for people, those of us who now live in post-USSR times, and people who are not Russian speakers, to know about this man?
Well, this is the end of 2008, and this year was, I think, quite a pivotal year in the history of humankind. It kind of, I would say, symbolized a turn to the left, not only in the United States, but elsewhere in the world. And that was the year which symbolically was a year of demise, of the death of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who was the one who warned us and who warned the people all over the world, including his native mother, Russia, that totalitarianism, that socialism in all its forms is a very deadly prescription for human mind and spirit.
Well, Dr. Devlin, I want to ask you the same question. You know, it's very easy for political commentators such as myself to just pluck the top headlines off of any given newspaper throughout the country and offer our opinion on that. Why do you feel as though it's important that we examine the man, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, tonight on this program and give people a little more information about him?
Alexander Solzhenitsyn was the preeminent critic of Marxism as it existed in practice in the Soviet Union. And we ourselves, especially the European Union, the European part of the West, is now under a regime which resembles the Soviet Union in certain ways. The so-called anti-racist movement and even feminism, which I've spoken to you about before, are ideologies that are based to a great extent on Marxism. The European Union seems to be at least partly consciously modeled on the Soviet Union. So Solzhenitsyn's relevance for us today is actually greater than it was when he was more famous back in the 70s, I believe.
Well, Dr. Devlin, while we're on that vein, and then I want to return with a question for Professor Maltsev. Can you further elaborate just a little bit more on the political positions of Solzhenitsyn?
Well, he was a localist. He believed in self-government for people at the local level. He was opposed to the cult of bigness in the Soviet Union. Also, in economic matters, he was a champion of small business, family business, as opposed to giant state projects. And he was a defender of traditional standards of art as well, as opposed to the officially imposed socialist realism of Russian literature.
Professor Maltsev, how would you classify the implied or explicit economic thinking of Alexander Solzhenitsyn?
Well, he was a great writer, maybe not as great as economist, because he sometimes would talk a lot about greed and about the need for compassion, because he was very Christian. He was a true Christian person, and I think we should cherish him for the other thing, not for his great economic stuff, but for his exposure of atrocities, of communism. Not many people in the West know. We are very well aware of Nazi atrocities, but we don't know that 60 million people perished in the Soviet Union alone, and another 55 million perished in China, and millions of others were slaughtered in other communist countries. And Solzhenitsyn, he was one of these victims, and he exposed the nature of this regime. And I think that's what he should be praised for.
Yes, if I may say, That figure of 60 million is one that Solzhenitsyn announced himself in the 1970s following the publication in the West of the Gulag Archipelago, and he was widely criticized for it. People just thought it was an exaggeration, a polemical exaggeration on his part. Nobody believed that so many people could possibly have been killed. But that's about what the scholars are saying now, that the 60 million figure was right.
Exactly. Please continue on.
Go ahead, Mr. Maltsev.
Well, Stalin himself, he once said that the death of one person is a tragedy, but death of a million is statistic. And to tell the truth, I don't care if that was 61 million people killed, as Solzhenitsyn said, or that was 59 million. I think this unimaginable scope of these atrocities, it's just, and now we see people who are saying, no, that was not 60 million, that was 20 million. Some others would say 43 million. KGB admitted 43 million. But does it make much of a difference? Does it make much of a difference that was the most deadly, the most ruinous, the most horrible inhuman regime in the history of Earth?
And it seems to have been lost to antiquity. I mean, people don't even talk about it. I mean, you certainly hear about the alleged atrocities that are attributed to the Germans during World War II, but during that same era, you had a, if you want to use the word Holocaust, of even much more epic proportions going on in Russia, and yet it's never talked about today. And that's, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this man, Solzhenitsyn, a guy for whom I have a great deal of respect. And, you know, this show certainly has consistent themes, this radio program does, and certainly we're forced to talk about a lot of issues, and we have great guests on. But one of the things I like to do from time to time is to use this all-important radio forum to shine a spotlight on men who have made a difference for our people, but perhaps aren't getting their just due, at least the way I would like to see them remembered. But I know that this is a subject, Professor Maltsev, that probably strikes an even more personal chord with you than perhaps it does for me or Dr. Devlin. And I want to ask you that question along those lines. How did Alexander Solzhenitsyn influence you while you lived in the USSR? How was he viewed by professors and society at large at the time?
Well, I really have some personal, very personal relation to Solzhenitsyn. Not that I knew about him, but my own grandfather, Alexander Maltsev, was murdered in 1938. He was the chief architect of Sochi. It's a beautiful resort on the Black Sea. Mm. And he designed an opera house there and beautiful embankment and everything. And then he was accused of being a Japanese spy. And during this show trial there in Sochi, he was just, the only thing he was saying is that I never saw a Japanese in my life. And then he was murdered, as well as 60 million or 38 or 43 million, I don't care how many, of his compatriots. Every Russian, every Lithuanian, every Latvian, Estonian, Ukrainian family was touched by these repressions. Mm-hmm. Stalin murdered way more people than Hitler murdered in the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And one of my missions, I think, is to tell my students, to tell anybody who cares to listen how murderous this regime was and how dangerous is socialism, because the people who organized this mass murder at first emerged as wonderful intellectuals. Lenin spoke six languages. Trotsky wrote poetry in French. They were wonderful people. And then the logic of socialism turned them into mass murderers who left behind this trail of blood forever and ever.
It's a very strange thing. A lot of
Marxism is adopted. I don't mean to interrupt you. We're 20 seconds to break. Okay. So if you just want to hold your thought, when we come back from this next commercial, we'll let you pick it up right there. Ladies and gentlemen, the Political Cesspool Radio program will continue in just a moment here on the Republic Broadcasting Network when we continue our discussion of Alexander Solzhenitsyn with Dr. F. Roger Devlin and Dr. Yuri Maltsev. We're back right after this.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Hi, this is Tommy John. I may not be pitching for the major leagues anymore, but that doesn't mean I don't like to stay active. But like you, I get those pesky joint pains that come with age. So I take GoFlex. GoFlex is the 1-2 punch to knock out pain. It has an FDA-approved cream to quickly relieve joint pain and a doctor-approved vitamin that will guard your mobility and flexibility. So if you're suffering from pains associated with arthritis or the aches that come with age, GoFlex will help you. I know firsthand what pain is like. Years ago, they did a surgery on my arm so famous that they named it after me, the Tommy John surgery. Today, I don't let joint pain slow me down, and neither should you. If you're suffering from minor aches and pains, even the kind associated with arthritis, try GoFlex, risk-free. Thanks to GoFlex, even at my age, I can still throw batting practice.
To order GoFlex risk-free, dial 800-362-5848. That's 800-362-5848. 800-362-5848.
At the time of death, loved ones are forced to make many important and difficult decisions. Planning together allows families to avoid difficult decisions in the future and gives you peace of mind now. Autumn Woods Memorial Park is a new perpetual care cemetery located 1 mile south of Goodman Road in Olive Branch, Mississippi. Autumn Woods is the largest cemetery in DeSoto County and serves the entire DeSoto County, Memphis metropolitan area. Autumn Woods Memorial Park allows for a dignified and peaceful final resting place. Autumn Woods Memorial Park is locally owned and operated. The staff is committed to providing the best possible service at the most affordable price. Autumn Woods Memorial Park now has side-by-side lots starting at $600. Come by and visit our beautiful property, conveniently located at 6240 Davison Road in Olive Branch, Mississippi, or call us at 901-521-9520. You can also find us online at www.autumnwoodsmemorialpark.com. Let's return to the political cesspool and our own bunch of rebels, the political cesspool guys.
So today, I'll be standing right by his side. When
you know, certainly this program is here to serve as a voice for our people, European Americans, paleoconservatives or populists, or however you want to describe this folk movement. And we're here to talk about the issues of trade, foreign policy, political correctness, illegal immigration, you name a subject. We're going to have an expert on to talk about it, and certainly we've gone on record about all of the contemporary topics over the course of the last 4 years. But in addition to all of that, we want to serve as an educational venue as well and talk about individuals and issues that you're not going to hear anywhere else. That's what makes this show so unique. And as we continue on now with Dr. F. Roger Devlin and Dr. Yuri Maltsev, we are continuing our spotlight on a man that perhaps not a lot of you have heard before, and it's of no fault of your own. Dr. Devlin, you were beginning to make a point
yes.
right before we ran into that last commercial break, and I want to allow you to continue to do that. But before you do, I want to throw in this question as well and let you just tackle both of
sure.
them at once. How do you believe people in the English-speaking world view Solzhenitsyn, and do Americans have a distorted image of him, or do they even know who he is at all?
Yeah, many of the younger generation don't. So let me say a little bit about Solzhenitsyn. He spent 8 years in the Gulag. He was a prisoner of Stalin for 8 years. He had been an officer in the Red Army fighting in the Second World War until February of 1945. He made some mildly critical remarks about Stalin in a letter to a friend. He was somewhat naive, I guess. He didn't realize that the letters were all opened and read by the KGB, by the secret police. And his friends and the people he met in the camp sometimes laughed at him for not knowing that this would happen. But anyway, he spent 8 years and managed to survive. The rate of survival in these camps was something like 10% or so. But he managed to survive and got a job as a school teacher and wrote a story about a typical day in the life of a Gulag prisoner. It was called A Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich. And Nikita Khrushchev, who was ruling Russia by this time, decided that this story would be useful as a part of his de-Stalinization campaign. And so it was permitted to be published, and for a brief period, some other works of Solzhenitsyn were published, and he became a world-famous author overnight.
Well, you know, I want to ask you one more thing about this, Dr. Devlin, you know, just a personal insight into the man and his ideology, and then we're going to have to go to another break. We have a real short segment here. We're going to pick up with Dr. Maltsev on the other side of that break. But
all right.
Certainly, as with any man who's worth his weight in salt, you know, any man that's done any good, there's going to be a lot of bad things said about him. Kathy
yes.
Young of Reason Magazine chronicled Solzhenitsyn's so-called anti-Semitism.
Oh, yeah.
Was his work, 200 years together, actually anti-Semitic in the traditional sense of the term,
no,
meaning an irrational hatred of Jews, or was it something else?
No. Solzhenitsyn also specifically denies that the Jews were responsible for the revolution or that communism was a Jewish plot. It is true that the Jews were well represented within the ranks of the Communist Party for a period of about 20 years, the first 20 years after the revolution. And they were also quite active as leaders in the revolutionary movement before the revolution, but many other people were too. And Solzhenitsyn was very concerned that his fellow Russians should not try to blame all of the revolution on the Jews. And in fact, he specifically tried to mute the Jewish role to some extent in his novels about the revolution. Having done that, he decided to come clear in this last work with a full history of the Jews and Russians 200 years together, from the 1770s to the 1970s.
Very
interesting. I hope we're going to get a chance to read that book sometime. Until that time comes, I have done a review, which is going to be coming out in the Occidental Quarterly this winter.
You know, speaking of TOQ, we just concluded a promotion for the Occidental Quarterly through our website. And now is the time I would normally encourage folks listening to us live this evening to visit our website. Unfortunately, due to heavy traffic that we've endured this month, and that's a good problem to have, our website is actually down right now. But it'll be back up soon enough. It actually went down after we came on air tonight. So that's a good problem to have. I just received an email from our webmaster saying they are on top of the problem, and it's, again, a good problem to have. So if you're checking out thepoliticalcesspool.org right now and you're wondering why it's down, and I'm sure I'm getting emails about it, set tight. It will be back online soon enough. And
if you can learn something.
And we're going to continue to learn more from our two esteemed guests, Dr. F. Roger Devlin and Dr. Yuri Maltsev. When the Political Cesspool continues tonight, we're going to turn it back over to Professor Maltsev for some more insight and opinion and analysis of the man we're focusing on this evening, Alexander Solzhenitsyn. That's the damn thing about it, ladies and gentlemen. In addition to talking about the things you want to know about and need to know about, you've got to serve as a learning institute, too, because you're not going to get information about a man like this in public schools. Martin Luther King, maybe, but not people you need to know about, and we're going to do that for you. And I continue to do that for you when we return right after this. Sit tight, everyone. Don't go anywhere.
Walk down the street forget the funniest look.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
And people say we monkey around, but we're too busy singing to put anybody down. We're just trying to be friendly. I come and watch you sing and play.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264. And johngliha.com.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and in some instances your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
Personal information should stay personal, but the growth of contactless ID cards, passports, and credit cards, and the proliferation of RFID has caused an increased threat to sensitive personal information, with the risk potential for RFID-enabled contactless cards to be read without your permission. Introducing Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder products from Identity Stronghold. If you have a credit, debit, or transit card with a contactless smart card system, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have an employee ID, proximity card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you have a government employee PIV, CAC, or TWIC card, you need Identity Stronghold. If you received your passport within the last 2 years, you need Identity Stronghold. Identity Stronghold's Secure Sleeve and Secure Badge Holder create a barrier to RF signals necessary to power and communicate with RFID-enabled smart cards and passports. Protect your personal information. Visit IDStronghold.com today or phone 800-610-2770, because personal information should stay personal.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. To get on the show, call toll-free at 1-800-313-9443. And now here's your host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everyone. Continuing on in this unusually warm December night here in Memphis, Tennessee this evening with our guest, Dr. F. Roger Devlin, who holds his Ph.D. in philosophy, and Dr. Yuri Maltsev, who received his Ph.D. in economics, both men very accomplished and talented writers, and are on with me this evening to help shine a spotlight on Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Professor Maltsev, I'd like to turn it back over to you for a moment and ask you this question as a man who has spent time, obviously, to say the least, in Russia. Have European Jews always been seen as outsiders in Russia? Were they ever assimilated to the degree that they now are here in America, or were they always seen as a nation apart?
Well, this is a $100 million question. And, well, the Jews assimilated in Russia beginning in the 17th and 18th century, and because of persecution in Western Europe, and many of them settled down there. However, they realized that maybe that was not the right place to come, because Russian governments, including Tsarist governments, and then especially Stalin himself, they were portraying Jews as scapegoats for everything bad which was happening in Russia at that time. And Jews themselves, when they were prosecuted by Tsar's government, many of them embraced socialism as an alternative, and many of them ended up in the first Soviet government. To the point that today many anti-communists erroneously accuse Jews of atrocities, of all this heinous crimes against Russian people and Ukrainians and others. However, we should keep in mind that we're not Jews who are killing people, we're communists of all nationalities. And I wanted to say politically correct of all denominations, but no, they had only one denomination. They were militantly atheists. They didn't believe in anything. But Jews today in Russia are still considered as scapegoats. They are prosecuted. Most of them left already. In Russia, when I lived in the Soviet Union, they had 3.6 million Jews. Now they have 200,000 left. Only most of them immigrated to this country or to Israel and to other countries. And definitely Solzhenitsyn is being attacked from all sides. He is being attacked not only as anti-Semite, which he is not definitely. If you will read his book, 200 Years Together, you would see that this book is nothing to do with anti-Semitism. Then he was KGB fabricated a story that he was a KGB agent himself, even. KGB fabricated a story that he was reporting on the people he was meeting with, which I believe is not true at all. However, we should keep in mind that regime was so evil that they could do almost anything to anybody.
Dr. Devlin, we once again heard in Dr. Maltz's commentary just then the book 200 Years Together. Did Solzhenitsyn, in your opinion, Dr. Devlin, think of Jews as enacting a group strategy while promoting communism, as say Dr. Kevin MacDonald might imply?
Not really. Solzhenitsyn points out that in the last years of Tsarist Russia, he actually lists six movements that attracted Jews. There were more Zionists Jews than there were socialist Jews, for example. There was a kind of religious revival. Many Jews in that time turned back to Jewish orthodoxy and the practice of Jewish law. And then most of the socialists were not actually Bolsheviks either. There were all different kinds of socialists, and some also decided to emigrate. There was a mass movement of emigration to America at that time. So the Jews were doing all kinds of things. No, there certainly wasn't any kind of a collective action of the Jews as such.
And again, these are all provocative questions, and I appreciate the candor from both of you men on these questions. Dr. Maltzev, I want to go back to you for a moment. As we try to learn as much as we can in the limited time we have available tonight about this man, some people have called Solzhenitsyn a theocrat or perhaps a pan-Slavic nationalist. How did Solzhenitsyn's Orthodox Christianity inform his political and economic worldview?
Well, the first thing I want to add a little bit to the Jewish issue, that Jews, as everybody else, many of them are on the side of freedom, some of them are on the side of slavery, definitely. And we have great Jews like Milton Friedman, like Ludwig von Mises, and many others who did almost everything to promote liberty for all humankind. And we have Jews who were with the Cheka, with NKVD, with KGB. So it's not the issue, again, of Jewishness or Christianity. It's the issue of who sold their soul to the devil and who didn't. speaking about Solzhenitsyn's attitude to Russian Orthodox Church, I just wrote a eulogy for Alexis II. He was the patriarch, the head of Russian Orthodox Church. And he was, in 1956, he was drafted by the KGB, and he was an agent of KGB, an active agent, and he was selling his ship to the KGB, to the devil. Can you imagine what kind of baggage, how difficult for a Russian today to cope with all this, that you have not just a skeleton in a cupboard, but millions and millions of that. Mm. And you have people whom you would refer to as your leaders. And these leaders would betray you, because Russian Orthodox Church is based on the sacredness of confession. And so you go and you confess to a priest, and then this priest puts it all in writing and turn you into the KGB. So this is something which is still difficult to deal with for ordinary Russian.
Dr. Devlin, it sounded as though Professor Maltiv was saying right there was something that was provocative to you. Would you like to expound on that?
Yes, it's very sad that the church was corrupted so badly in Russia as it was, for example, in Romania. I wanted to say something about the lack of understanding of Solzhenitsyn in the West. I think a lot of people have the idea that he belongs to the Cold War period, and that may be one reason that sometimes publishers are reluctant to bring out some of his works. They just don't think Americans will be interested in it. But Solzhenitsyn was a Christian, and like Christianity, his message is really timeless.
I want to ask you this too. There's a lot with that in embodied in Solzhenitsyn that we would find appealing, but then you look and I have to ask you the question: why would a man such as Solzhenitsyn have supported such government policies as zero economic growth and strict antitrust laws and progressive taxation and land use restrictions, so on and so forth?
Well, it's easy again to blame him for something that he is not, because when he returned back to Russia, he was already a very old person. He was very old person. He was very tired person, very frail person, and then he would see the so-called spontaneous privatization going on in Russia after the demise of the Soviet Union. We call this spontaneous privatization a theft. And so he was a witness to this theft. He was witness to people squandering natural resources. And then he came up with some, in his interviews, not in his serious writing, with some day-to-day kind of answers. And I disagree with Solzhenitsyn on a lot of issues, especially economics. I would disagree with him definitely in his support at the end of his life of President Putin, who is, I think, another crook in power over there. But that should not, in any way, it should not, I think, distract our attention from his real input.
Professor Maltsev, you were working for the Russian government as a sort of an economic advisor. Was that under Gorbachev or Yeltsin?
For Gorbachev. I wasn't the advisor, so I wouldn't take the blame.
Was Solzhenitsyn's economic criticisms, were they directed at the sort of policies that you were representing or not?
No, in no way. I wasn't representing anybody except myself. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Gorbachev, he tried to reform socialism. He thought, in a very strange way, that socialism is still very good, but it was corrupted by Stalin and the likes. And we should have socialism with human face, which is an oxymoron to my mind. Mm-hmm. And what Gorbachev did, he removed fear out of the system, which was glued only by fear, and the system collapsed right away. Mm-hmm. So that was the story of Gorbachev. Mr. Yeltsin did not have any program. He He was a person who didn't believe in socialism, definitely. However, I think that his personal qualities, especially his liking of certain kind of beverages, unfortunately was very bad for the country.
Solzhenitsyn was harshly critical of Yeltsin, despite Yeltsin's sharing his opposition to socialism.
Right. But from another hand, he was critical on a personal level.
Yes.
He wasn't critical of Yeltsin as anti-communist, but he was critical of Yeltsin as a drunkard, as a person who was, and he was disorganized and whatnot. But what we got after him is much, much worse.
Yes.
Dr. Devlin, we have but a few minutes remaining in this segment this evening before, unfortunately, time will lapse and I have to let you gentlemen go. And in conclusion of this segment on Solzhenitsyn, and certainly I want to afford you the opportunity as well, Dr. Maltsev, to answer this question, is there anything that I have failed to ask that you feel as though the audience should really know about this man? And
yeah,
Dr. Devlin, I'll start with you.
I was absolutely delighted to be on this program, and I really liked what Dr. Devlin was saying, and I would definitely be happy to be on this program again, and then we can discuss relationship between what happened in Soviet Union, I think, and what's happening today in European Union and in the United States, because
I think it would be fascinating to draw those parallels.
Yeah,
I tell you what, that's a good idea for a forthcoming program. And God willing, and if the Lord stays is coming, we will have time for plenty more of those before my time is up. But certainly, Dr. Maltsev and Rogers, you know as well, you're more than welcome to be my guest at any time. But in wrapping up this interview, Roger, is there anything that I failed to bring up about Alexander Solzhenitsyn that you feel as though the audience should know about?
Well, yes. The Solzhenitsyn's most legendary work, I suppose, is The Gulag Archipelago. Now, that's a very difficult book to read. I would actually recommend that readers interested in Solzhenitsyn begin with a shorter work like A Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, or perhaps The Solzhenitsyn Reader, which came out just last year, actually.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Did a review of it. It's a very fine collection, The Solzhenitsyn Reader. The Gulag Archipelago is a three-volume work, a harrowing account of the forced labor camps under Stalin, in which, as I say, Solzhenitsyn was a prisoner himself for 8 years. He never made a cent out of that work. All of the money was used to form a foundation to help prisoners of the Gulag who get nothing now from the government. They were more or less released with the clothes on their back, but nothing else. And Solzhenitsyn's foundation is still providing care and a little bit of money, at least, to the victims of Stalin and the Gulag. And there's actually a new website now, Solzhenitsyn.ru. Unfortunately, it's only in Russian for the time being. They may add some English soon. That was started just since his death and by his family foundation, the Solzhenitsyn Foundation in Russia. And they intend to carry on his work and publish more of his writings.
Dr. Devlin, I want to ask Dr. Maltsev, did you want to make a comment?
I want just to make a very short comment that Solzhenitsyn, at the end of his life, he said, the only lesson of history is it does not teach us anything. And I think that, well, that's what we should keep in mind, that this horrendous crimes, which went unnoticed in the West, and we should talk more and more and more about that for kind of moral cleansing, both in Russia and here.
Absolutely. Dr. Devlin, in closing, and Professor Maltsev, I'm going to give you the opportunity to answer this question as well as we wrap up here. Who do you think, Roger, would be a parallel intellectual figure to Solzhenitsyn in the English-speaking world today?
Oh, dear, there's nobody. That's why you have to read Solzhenitsyn. There is no novelist to compare with him. There is no public prophet to compare with him. Maybe Gee, that is a very difficult question.
Well, I'll ask you
and I think we're maybe next time
this
I'm on
is
the
probably
show.
One that's unfair to ask because certainly we can't be presumptuous enough to answer the question for a man who's not here to answer it for himself. But what thinkers or political figures do you think Solzhenitsyn might admire if he were still alive?
Oh, there are a number of people who are, so to speak, parts of Solzhenitsyn, like Solzhenitsyn's localism and his concern with the rule of law might be well represented by Ron Paul, excuse me. I don't know whether he would have voted for Ron Paul for president, but there are similarities there.
And I'd like to ask that question just to give people a perspective there. If we're talking about a man, and certainly, listen, I mean, we have a very intelligent audience here. I don't want to act as though I would be surprised if people were well-versed in the history of Solzhenitsyn who listen to this program regularly, because certainly people who listen to this show are a rare breed indeed. But I would like to, you know, ask that question just to serve as a way to draw a parallel between his thinking and perhaps some others that are even more contemporary. But listen, guys, we got 5 seconds left. I'm going to break my promise. If you don't mind hanging on for one more segment, we will wrap it up at that time. Sit tight, doctors. We'll continue, ladies and gentlemen, with the Political Cesspool right after this on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
That's just a little bit more than the law of the law.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Are you ready for the coming winter? Are you really ready for the diseases that have been cooked up for this year? Flu viruses, staph, even MRSA, or strep. Remember, flu vaccines are made from past year's viruses, not what's current and coming at you. Go to buyyoungliving essential oils.com, where you will find the top standardized therapeutic quality essential oils on the planet. Order and try out the Body and Environment Safe Thieves product line. The antimicrobial essential oil blend, household cleaner, foaming hand soap, spray, throat lozenges, and many more. Use pure therapeutic grade essential oils because they are safe and many are extremely effective at killing any bacteria, virus, or fungus, and they never become resistant to these oils. At buyyounglivingessentialoils.com, you'll find out what it's really like to get your health back.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264 and johngalia.com.
What time is it? Louis time.
And now let's return to the political cesspool.
All right, everybody. James Edwards back with you here live this 27th night of December 2008. Wrapping up the final moment here with our interview with the very esteemed individuals, Dr. Yuri Maltsev and Dr. F. Roger Devlin. Coming up immediately after the doctors leave the program, we're going to be shifting our sights towards Obama and Rick Warren and, man, all the stuff. I tell you, it's much more uplifting to talk about Solzhenitsyn. But Professor Maltsev, wanted to ask you the same question in closing that I just posed to Dr. Devlin. If Solzhenitsyn were alive today, what thinkers or individuals might he admire? And do you think that there is, in fact, a parallel intellectual figure to him in the world today?
Well, I think we are fortunate enough that we don't have a parallel figure. That means that with all this talk about fairness and stuff like that, we still do not have a gulag state in the United States. So none of our figures or figures in the United Kingdom or European Union suffered so much as he did, so they couldn't produce the narrative equal to his of the state which was coercing and murdering its own people. But from another hand, I think that Solzhenitsyn probably would like. He liked Vermont. He liked where he lived. He liked the localism. That's absolutely right. He liked the community kind of spirit, not community spirit in the sense of collectivism, but community spirit in the sense of people taking care of themselves. And I don't want to speculate whom of the politicians he would like here. I think that definitely, according to his views, I would think that, and at least that people like Ron Paul or Sarah Palin or others who are for the same ideals, for the same goals as he spent his life for limited government, for freedom, for liberty, for economic freedom, which is definitely a part of human freedom, and he was. He was definitely, irrespective to what he wrote about progressive income tax or whatever, I think that he would be on the side of freedom squarely.
Doctors, again, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking the time to be with me and our audience this evening here on the Political Cesspool Radio Program. Have the utmost respect and admiration for the work that you gentlemen conduct, and look forward to talking to you again, hopefully sooner rather than later.
It was
all right,
a pleasure,
very good,
and I would like to wish you a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and Roger, always a pleasure to talk to you, although I do get to talk to you a little bit more than I get to talk to Yuri.
All right.
Hey,
well,
God bless you, gentlemen, and we will talk to you again soon. And for you and the listening audience, I will talk to you in about 2 minutes, right after this next break. Get ready to burn up those phone lines. We're going to shift our gaze. Anyway, we're going to be shifting our focus, our attention. You pick the word. We're going to be shifting it to more pressing affairs of state with the political cesspool returns. And we're going to take your calls right after this on RBN. Don't go anywhere.
Don't go away. Hour number two of tonight's installment of the political cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
Hello, my name is...